We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
Now a special Talk Radio 1210 WPHT presentation. It's Readin', Writin', and Reason. Now here's your host, Dom Giordano.
Hey everyone, welcome in to this week's edition of Readin', Writin', and Reason. And you know, one of the themes this week is we are in a point now where the COVID crisis, we're still fighting the battle of reopening schools, but now we're moving into vaccination of kids. Yeah. Yes, no. I haven't got one caller yet or email or text or whatever with Dom Giordano saying, yeah, I'm going to do that with my 14-year-old. I mention that because there is a new star out there in crazy Philly light, Philly town, suburban style, Montgomery County. You know about Valerie Arcus, you know about the Dean of Decency, Madeline Dean. Well, now this Democrat State Senator Amanda Cappelletti, as we start to move toward different aspects involving education and kids and COVID, which has been going on here in an education show, well, she has this bill, we're waiting to see if it gets scuttled or not, that would say 14-year-olds can consent to receiving federally recommended immunizations without parental approval, including the vaccine, the COVID vaccine. Are you hearing what I'm saying? So if the kid's 14, 15, 16, whatever, and says no, I want to get that vaccine, and the parent says, no, it's a parental decision or the guardian. This Amanda Cappelletti, who is seen as one of the most progressive people in Harrisburg from Montgomery County, says, yeah, they should be allowed to do it. And it would prohibit this bill, parents or guardians, from overruling that consent. Now, here we go, right? Just another angle of progressive screwing up the education parenting process. In what universe should the government have the right to make the decision around the COVID vaccine? Now, you know, if it's measles, if it's things like that, that's been fought about. That's law or statute, or it depends. But COVID, you can't just jump in here. That hasn't been duked out. She gives all the reasons for it, but that does not mean that legislatively anything has been passed as a preamble to saying you're taking this out of the hands of parents at this point. I mean, heck, this stuff is just about a week old, government approval on this. So spread the word on this. We're trying to get her on, but of course it's difficult. Something else that's happened now, coming to this next phase of over a year of the lockdown in different ways, shapes, and forms, the Republicans have a bill that looks like it's going to pass. But I would advise parents not to do the choice in this. What I'm referencing is they have a bill sponsored by the head of the Senate, Jake Corman, that says parents are concerned about the pandemic and changes in education, how it was delivered, all the dip. We all know that, right? And parents should have a much bigger role in determining whether or not their kid can stay back a year or not. Now, I think parents should have a bigger role in that. I'm not even sure how much of a role, if any, they have in this really now. It's more of a school decision, ultimately, I believe, right? I don't know if it depends on the school district or not. It's a little bit fuzzy. But the bottom line is this. What I'm saying is, I don't think it's a good idea to hold your kid back. It would have to be something wildly exceptional. I don't think it's a good idea to be going to full-time summer school. I mean, if you want enrichment, tutoring, someone like Kathy Ganna or a local tutor, remember Kathy Ganna is 800-300-0003, you can do that. But I think this summer, on top of all others, has to have a lot of summer in it, meaning a lot of period of time where kids can rebound, where they have some fun. They get away from all that we've seen that's out there. Now, part of what I'm thinking about, too, a brilliant article that I've seen, talk about it's not just COVID and hybrid and Zooming and all the nonsense that's going on and the anxiety created by this over this last, 14 months or so. It's also the fact that we have seen this infiltration. And we've talked about it a lot. You can call it anti-racism, which sounds nice on paper, or critical race theory. I'm looking at a brilliant article this week at The Federalist. That's where you find it. Headline, "To Fight Racism, Should White Children Be Made Uncomfortable?" This is the anthem here. We're going to make white kids in school uncomfortable. And the author of this says examples abound in what's going on in schools. This anti-racist author, Robin DiAngelo, she does this with adults. We have to make white adults uncomfortable. Okay, now that's one thing. If you want to sign up for her seminars or you believe that, okay. And maybe even in work settings, you're going to see some of that. But the author writes, are we saying that, say, an 8 or 9 year old kid, when they employ this in schools, should be made to feel uncomfortable? Why should the kid feel uncomfortable? Well, because of privilege, because of history, because of all that. Is that what we're going to be doing? Just think of how insidious this is, that we may be doing this with kids. And the author says some of the preamble to this is a 2018 Washington Post article titled, "White Parents Teach Their Kids to Be Colorblind. Here's why that's bad for everyone." So telling your kid to practice tolerance, being colorblind, is that a tell? Do you get the idea that that is out now? That that's not what you can say? That's not acceptable? That there is no such thing? That that by itself is evidence of a problem on your behalf? So watch for that. It's out there. And it's something that I find to be objectionable. We shouldn't be making kids feel uncomfortable in school. Another article at the American Enterprise Institute, which is a conservative, moderately conservative outfit, they write how anti-racism is derailing efforts to improve education. They say that this is not based upon anything that's logical. It's not legitimate. And what it's doing, mixed in with all the crisis around COVID, is makes things so much worse. And I couldn't agree more. That's exactly where we are. One other thing I briefly mentioned here, but on this show we talk about all the way up to the collegiate level, reading, writing, and reason with Dom and Dan. A Georgia law would now allow schools, it's like the third or fourth state that's done this, to allow athletes, college athletes, to earn money off their name, image, and likeness starting on July 1. Now, I'm on board with that, as difficult as that is. Here's the kicker in here. This guy, Brian Kemp, the governor, alleged Republican of Georgia. Remember this guy during all the stuff that went on in Georgia? He signed this into law, and he knows that in the bill, the school can pool 75% of the money earned by said athlete for their name, image, and likeness and redistribute it to other athletes on the team or across the athletic spectrum at a school. This guy's a Republican. Look, if we're going to let people at the college level, and I'm okay with this, they're earners, influencers, whatever they are, make money in doing this, we're going to redistribute it and give it to these others? What kind of lesson is that? So, no, I oppose this governor and this Georgia law watch. There'll be a lot more because we care about college sports. Hey, speaking of colleges, too, one more thing. I saw this at a website called Zero Hedge, and it just came up this week because of how outrageous it is. Everybody remembers the Jerry Sandusky matter, right? Well, there was a guy named Gary Schultz. He was the senior vice president for finance and business. And he was told that assistant football coach in 2001, Jerry Sandusky, had sexually assaulted a boy in the school's locker room. You, of course, know that neither he nor any other Penn State administrators reported it to law enforcement, child care, or youth services. He was charged with perjury and failing to report to authorities allegations of a sexual contact with a minor. He retired from Penn State, and due to some loopholes, he even pleaded guilty to endangering the welfare of children in March 2017, sent to jail, released in September 2017. Here's the kicker. He continues to get and got an annual pension of $330,699. How in the world does that happen? And how in the world does a guy working there at Penn State get an annual pension of over $330,000, no matter what he was making? That's an incredible pension. I believe that's for life. I'm not sure. Now, Sandusky, who's serving 30 to 60 year prison sentence after his conviction on 45 counts of sexually abusing young boys from 1994 to 2009 through the charity he founded, The Second Mile, retired. And he received and continues to receive to this day, Jerry Sandusky, in taxpayer money, a pension of $58,600 from Jerry Sandusky. It's amazing, the bureaucracy. It's amazing at that level, the type of stuff that goes on. But that's where we are. One more thing to mention to you, too. I'm looking at a piece in the Burlington County Times. As I said, we're in a new area here where you're going to hear talk of vaccine passports, but you're going to hear a lot of emphasis on what to do with the kids. I mentioned summer school. I mentioned leaving them back a year. I mentioned whether you should vaccinate them or not. I'm looking at this piece in the Burlington County Times, and the parents going back and forth. Are these parents going to be shunned? Because they're saying, hey, I'm wary. I don't get it why we should be vaccinating 13 and 14 years of age right now. Why are we doing that? Another school of it's available to kids as young as 12. Another school says, well, they'll be influencers, these 12 and 13-year-olds. When some unvaccinated people see them, then they're going to act to go and get vaccinated themselves. I don't see that happening. I just see this as we're headed into another rough period here where anything is possible, and I don't think any good's going to come of this. So at this point, it's a parental decision. It should be a parental decision, and there's no way that we should move forward with this. All right, coming up, our big interview of this week. Finally, we got on the show Donna Sharon. She is the vice president of the Souderton School Board. I wrote a column, my biweekly column for the Buckskenny Courier Times, praising the Souderton School Board, because Souderton was the one school that I know of. If there are others, I'd love to hear it, who essentially, other than when they were under the edict of Valerie Arcouche right around Thanksgiving, that every school in Montgomery County had to shut down because of the potential of a super spreader over Thanksgiving, and they didn't come back to December 7th. Other than that, they made it a policy to have in-person learning right out of the box, and they stuck to it. I had her on. I called her Braveheart, how she cheered the troops on. And you're going to hear next the secret sauce. How in the world did they accomplish that when surrounding school districts and most school districts came nowhere close to that? This is a huge success story. But I did see there are elements out there that want to attack now on this, and I don't get that. This is America. These are people that were creative, that did it the right way, and they succeeded without an outbreak to have in-person learning. And as we all know, that is still the best thing that could come out of this. So that's next, the big interview of the week here on Reading, Writing, and Reason with Dom Giordano and Dan at the helms on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
Now a special Talk Radio 1210 WPHT presentation. It's Reading, Writing, and Reason. Now here's your host, Dom Giordano.
Hey, this is Reading, Writing, and Reason, and each week with Dom Giordano and Dan, we bring you the big interview of the week. This week, it's the vice president of the school board out there in Souderton. To our knowledge, maybe the only public school that really was determined and succeeded in remaining open, except for shut down by Valerie Arcouche, which they couldn't do anything about, throughout the school year for in-person learning. It's so rare. So I had a chance. I had her on the radio show. This is a replay of that because I think it's that important. Here's what I said, and then you hear Donna Sharon telling us what was the secret sauce. How did they do this in Souderton? Donna Sharon is the vice president of the school board, and I particularly pulled and put in the column what she said at a school board meeting. She said, and I quote, "We set a goal that even if the virus were to shut us down, if we could make it till Thanksgiving, our students would be at least 3 months ahead of all the other districts in the county, and we have hit that goal. And although some of us are pretty shook up by the mandate to go virtual, we're hoping and praying it doesn't disrupt our organization and very regimented routine for the students and staff in our buildings. We keep our fingers crossed, and we're going to hold Dr. Arcouche to that assertion, we'll be back on December 7th. Do you just hear that? Do you hear the urgency, the drive, the initiative? That's a large part of it, I think. But there were other things. That pledge in doing that and thinking that way, I think, is the secret sauce. Donna joins us here on Talk Radio 1210. Donna, welcome in, and thank you for taking the time to join us.
Well, hello there, Dom. Thank you so much. Appreciate the invitation. You wore me down, my friend. I'm finally here.
Don't say that. It gets me so revved up because I'm working on like 50 different things, Donna. And I gotta. I once called a guy so much back in the day of the pink slips, and he said, "I'll come on your show. We're running out of pink slips here." When they took the message, though, and I said, "Well, all right."
Truth be told, you tugged on my heartstrings with that article you wrote for the Bucks County Courier Times.
Well, yeah. I'm glad that we did. Because, look, I think it is so well-deserved. And you could probably tell, if I could put it in print more, you're hearing my voice. When I saw you enunciate that, that's like Braveheart. That's like saying, let's bleed with Wallace at Balfour here. I should have written that. You know what? I won't put that in the next column, if you don't mind. That mindset, to get up and say that, and you were polite with Dr. Arcouche. I wrote, too, you're not in an easy county. Bucks County would be easier to do this. So tell me, how did you have the ability and the board backing and you to make statements like that? Because it's rare in our area.
Well, we put the kids first, Dom. Everything after that falls into play. I mean, it's not just one person. I'm sure you you know that. It's
yes.
The entire school board. It's Dr. Frank Gallagher, our superintendent, and his administration. And it's the teaching staff. You know, they all came together, and we did what was necessary to make it happen.
Well, I want to ask about some specifics, because early on, Donna, way back then, we talked about some of the creative things as far as the physicality and resources. But this is a teachers' union that worked along with you. You got to know that's rare. In some instances, that didn't happen. So it must speak well of a long-term relationship with the board and the parents that things are going pretty well there.
Well, I would hope so. I mean, certainly last July and last August, the board was unanimous in its discussions with Dr. Gallagher and the administration that we were going back to in-person schooling in September. We assured him that we would have his back and give him the full support of whatever he needed to make it happen. And from there, we launched the questionnaire to the parents, guardians, teachers, asking what their preference was for education in September. And we received an overwhelming response that 75% wanted the kids back in the classroom, while 25% preferred virtual learning.
Mm-hmm. Did those 25%, Donna, start to come back over the course of the year? Is it still 75-25?
They have started. The numbers have started to increase. Good. I believe now we're at about 82 or 83% that are back in the classroom.
That is outstanding. And I like, look, it was polite with Dr. Arkush, who I think is, look, I know she's a public health and I know she's got a following and all. But that peremptory shutdown around Thanksgiving, you guys made it known that you're going to try to keep everything in place. But that's difficult to do if you start to lose some of the momentum.
Sure. And we wanted it reaffirmed, right? I mean, we were already closed for that week of Thanksgiving. That was normal for us with parent-teacher conferences online or what have you. So it was that additional week, and momentum was important. I think we came back from it definitely re-engaged, re-enthused. It may very well have helped to stop some spread, but with everything that we have in place, from seating charts in every classroom to seating charts in the lunchroom and the gyms and the tents outside that we use to spread the kids out through the winter months, purchased heaters, seating charts on the school bus, we had full ability to track and trace any cases or quarantine any kid that might have come in contact with somebody that tested positive.
So. Now, you hit upon my, it tickles me, that tent thing, because Donna, we spent a lot of time talking about that early on when that came up. It was creative, so that you had heated tents, as I understand, right? And then you were able to space out kids in the cafeteria and the other spaces around this. So it's kind of like a master plan, a landing, if you will, of getting all those pieces together. But it was doable. But wasn't that incredibly costly to get those tents and everything?
Well, it's funny. I'm also the finance chair for the school board, right? I've been in that position for almost 10 years now. So even though we told Dr. Gallagher he would have the full support of the board, I think he needed to hear it 2, 3, 4, 5 times from the finance chair, knowing that money was involved. But we had to, you know, launch staffing for the online academy. We had to get a handle on what teachers were returning. We had to get a handle on which ones were willing to switch over and teach online virtually. And then we had to go get, you know, full-time subs for the positions where we had vacancies. And yes, purchasing tents, purchasing heaters, purchasing bioblasting, you know, sprayers and canisters to be able to disinfect the classroom in 75 seconds, it all costs money. And we were prepared to find those funds wherever we had to in order to make sure the kids were not negatively impacted by not being in school. And thank God, Dom, between Montgomery County and the state and the feds, you know, guess what? Our costs are going to be covered.
Excellent. Well, see, that's, you know, I'm all on board when this money comes out, if it directly gets out the door and goes to do stuff like that. But it seems, Donna, that, you know, and look, I don't want to, I'm not negative toward it. You know, it just, I was frustrated to getting you guys on because this is such a story to tell. This is like a major magazine story to tell of what you did. I don't know too many that did this. Now, I know it's a great school district, and it's pretty well resourced. How much would it cost? But you got it almost completely funded. What would you say the cost of a lot of this stuff was? Do you have a ballpark figure?
Well, I think ballpark figure, we're looking between, you know, $1 to $2 million, right? It, a lot of it has to do with staffing costs and,
right,
and the PPP expense and thermometers for all 9 schools and nurses and district offices. And I mean, just the signage alone, having the kids walk in one direction throughout all the buildings, you know, getting a regimented structure in place. But at the same time, you know, 70 to 80% of all our school bus drivers, Dom, working for TSI, live right in the heart of Souderton School District. There was a lot of thought that put into it. We wanted to make sure they were going to be there when this pandemic was over. We wanted our, you know, parents and the community members that relied on those jobs to still have them when we went, you know, when the rest of the state, so to speak, went back full time in person.
I don't know what you're doing, but we could use, you know, positions of authority are out there, Donna, and it, I don't know if you've ever run for the political office, but this is exactly how you do it. It's urgency, it's thought, and I'm sure a lot of people had to buy in. You mentioned the superintendent. If I were that guy, too, and I heard the cost of these tents, I'd come back to you and saying, sign this three more times, but it all worked. So my producer, Dan, wanted to know, how many students came down with virus? When I read this writing for the article, I know there were some, but I don't think it was believed any or very few had anything to do with from school or related to school.
Well, part of launching the program was the communication with the parents. And every week we have a dashboard page, a COVID-19 page, if you will, that can be found on the Souderton School District website, where we continually listed the number of cases by school through students and through staffs. In fact, let's see, you know, total cases right now active in our school district, in our 9 schools, 11 students and 2 staff members. So we never hid anything, Dom. Certainly being able to trace and track it, you know, was how we fulfilled any requirements from the Board of Health and the state. And we always knew we were going to come down with a case. We never went into this thinking nobody was going to get sick. But, you know, the majority of students, if someone tested positive, he had to quarantine some classmates, you know, ask them to stay home, do virtual learning for 7 days, but they were able to come back when they had a negative test. It didn't have to shut down the school. We kept going.
It is incredible. So I assume come the fall, you will have the same diligence, but you have to think this is going to be a lot easier come September of this coming school year.
Well, it better be.
Yeah.
But we will have the same diligence and we'll continue to, you know, keep pushing the envelope. We already have the parents coming out to the school board meetings. They want to know if the masks are going to be off the kids, you know, especially the elementary school kids. We all know they need to see the formation of words and see a teacher's mouth, you know, being able to learn at that young age everything correctly. So many parents want to know what's going to happen come September. So,
yeah, well,
we're going to be pushing for that science and
yeah,
certainly helping our younger school kids as much as we can to make sure that they're back on track.
Couple of other things here. I mean, this one of the lessons is this is what happens when you trust your constituents, meaning teachers, superintendent, parents, and then vis-a-vis that with their kids to be responsible. This is massive, but it was done, proving it can be done.
That's right. There was a huge amount of trust from both the administration to the parents in the district to the school board, right? Asking for simple messaging on Sunday nights, you know, follow the procedures, just make sure any signs of a fever, please keep them home, you know, better safe than sorry for a day. Help us make it through the school year. And even this year, we still decided to go through with the prom. You know, we always had the sports launched. And now, of course, measures are dialing back May 31st, right, from the governor. So hopefully a lot of schools will be launching graduations, but it was always in place for us. We don't want these students to miss these golden opportunities in their school year.
Now, Donna, did other school districts contact you? Did you, you know, did people contact you to say, what are you guys doing here? Maybe we can pick something up?
Well, our superintendent holds a weekly meeting with all the superintendents in Montgomery County. He was willing to reach out and educate anyone willing to learn what we did. Me being on the school board, I realize you're probably not familiar, Dom, but any school board member has to serve on other committees, right? Reach
yes.
out to
mm-hmm.
MCIU, you know, the special needs programs and available to all the county schools. You have the wherewithal to reach many different school board members. So whoever was willing to listen, we certainly tried to educate them on what we did. I guess as time went by, it probably felt more monumental to try to implement, but it also wasn't rocket science, you know, and maybe many of these superintendents wanted to open. You know, the final say does come down to the school boards, but
yeah, well,
if
look,
they all
I
did
can
those
tell.
Questionnaires like Souderton did.
I can tell by the parents groups out there that we bring on, they are very, very supportive. They held an event for the teachers and staff and Dr. Gallagher and all that in the cafeteria, I think, in April, and I'm on their list. That's how I knew about it. That's rare because in many of these school boards, Don, as you know, they are gearing up. The one woman, Clarice Schillinger, has 90 candidates, but they're very supportive of what you guys did. That's why it's so remarkable. What school districts border on Souderton?
We border up to North Penn.
Okay.
You know, that's one of the largest ones right
yep.
on our neighboring district, right? We touch on Perk Valley, Upper Perk. You know, we're close to Methacton. You know, I'm thinking of all the surrounding school districts that send to the tech
okay.
school.
Yeah, I'm kind of thinking about that. It would be interesting to see how they handled it. You know, not that we're trying to embarrass these other school districts, but I'm just trying to see if there's anything. This was a major study, even though you weren't doing it for that reason. Was there any control factor that I don't see here? And I don't see anything other than this coming back to the school board and the superintendent and then the buy-in you got from the parents, kids, and teachers mostly, and then finding the money. And if, as you said, this money, a lot of it, it's going to be covered. This just makes it, to me, that's why I wanted you on so much, Donna. And it's everything that I could have think of. This is what I live for. When something like this happens, were you guys afraid if you came on, it would be like you're tooting your own horn too much or something? Was that it?
Well, I think you summarized it perfectly or kind of hit it on the head, you know, not wanting to take a victory lap. You know, Murphy's Law, right? We'd come out and tout
yeah.
our success and, you know, suddly, you know, massive cases or something would happen a week or two later.
I got
Look,
you.
We've gotten
yeah.
a lot of positive reinforcement, but it's no different than anything else in this world, Dom. People wanted us to succeed, and, you know, maybe there were others that, you know, not so much. So we just put our head down, kept our kids the priority, did what we had to do. I mean, Dr. Gallagher had the weight of the world on his shoulders. You don't like to think about woulda, shoulda, couldas, but, you know, certainly
yeah.
going forward and having positive momentum, we wanted to be able to say at the end of the day, at least we tried.
That it? I'm telling you, it is Braveheart. That's what I clipped this from the small newspaper, Don. I'm glad I put that in there because it motivated me. And if I were writing this more, I would emphasize that trust with all the constituents involved. And that speaks very, very well of what you guys are doing in Souderton.
Well, I appreciate that. It takes a village.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Donna, thank you so much. Please don't be a stranger. I'm sure other things will come up, and we'd love to know more about this as this story continues. Thank you, Donna.
Thank you, Dom.
Now a special Talk Radio 1210 WPHT presentation. It's Readin', Writin', and Reason. Now here's your host, Dom Giordano.
Hey, everyone. Each week here on Readin', Writin', and Reason, I come across any number of things that affect you as a taxpayer, as a parent, as a citizen. Here's one of the more remarkable ones. Ro just saw this the other day, said to me, this can't be. From the Federalist. You know that the test, the SAT, tests like that. Well, you may not know this, that what they've done is they have said they're tired of putting questions on the test or anything related, the SAT, the ACT, the AP, of the classics, Horace, Homer, Dante, Dostoevsky, And this guy writing at the, let's see his name here, education column at The Federalist, which is a great website. Whom should students read on standardized tests, Plato or Bernie Sanders? Well, they say that the College Board, which is the creator of the SAT, in the class of 2020, a class that graduated amidst a global pandemic and mass school and testing closures, 2.2 million students took the SAT at least once. In drafting the SAT, the College Board says they work assiduously to remove any reading samples that are deemed controversial. Well, case in point, a recent SAT included an op-ed by self-identified socialist Bernie Sanders, while classical text by Plato or Socrates, or even contemporary literature by Scott Fitzgerald and Ernest Hemingway, are regularly excluded, deemed triggering, and much too soon for the adult students to hear. The College Board also runs the Advanced Placement AP exams, where high school students can demonstrate preparedness for college and achieve college credit. So when the College Board created a new framework for the AP U.S. History exam, rife with leftist bias, including whitewashing critical moments like John Winthrop's City Upon a Hill speech, they did put in things, though, that were savvy to the left wing. I just mentioned Bernie Sanders. The bottom line, how could Bernie Sanders' op-ed be not controversial, be a question for fodder on the SATs, but the great ones, Dostoevsky, Dante, Homer, Horace, any of those are out of bounds. Too controversial. You got to love this stuff. Hey, we talked on the Daily Show this week, the Dom Giordano Show, 9 until noon, about a lot of information coming down. You've heard about it nationally with the teachers' union influencing the Biden administration. Randy Weingarten has now said this week that she's signing off on that we will have school nicer this September. She sees it happening now without a doubt. All the parties are together. Oh, it's going to be wonderful. Whether or not those kids will still be in masks is an open question, okay? But looking back on this now, our buddies over at broadandliberty.com, they have a guy named Todd Shepard, great investigative reporter. And I talked about it on my show this week. He was able to ascertain the meetings in Pennsylvania between the various school boards and the like and teachers' unions and Governor Wolfman Hack's outfit. And these are the very schools that were shut down. As you know, the only one that we know of in our area that was full bore in person for the whole school year was Souderton School District, which is Republican dominated. These other schools are not, and you see what the results are. Remember that when you vote on this coming Tuesday. Clarice Schillinger will be on with me. She's from Montgomery County. She's this woman, this mom, who's organized and has 90 school board candidates on the docket up for election, endorsed by her and her organization, Keeping Schools, Kids in School Packed. She'll be with me on Monday, sometime during the 9 to noon show. But it's remarkable what she's been able to achieve. And the bottom line for her is that these school boards, after Wolf got rid of the lockdown, they were the ones that did not do enough to open up schools again. They were afraid of the teachers' union or in their pocket, if you will, in some cases. You'll have a chance to vote on that and to hear it on Monday. But this story is devastating. It's very much like what happened on the national level with Randy Weingarten and the American Federation of Teachers. It's just that it happened here in Pennsylvania on the local level. And here's a case in point. The story of the week, if you missed it, is almost unimaginable. It involves a kindergarten teacher in the West Contra Costa United School District out there in California. The kindergarten teacher sent an email to families recently telling them online classes will be canceled for several days while she was on her trip due to travel and limited family activities to Mexico, where her son was getting married. Now, this teacher got the excuse that she had to stay home for health reasons, could not do in-person education, yet she went off to Mexico for a 12-day trip, which is apparently, according to one news report, here's what she wrote. A look ahead. What would you do if you got this email after that backstory? I will be traveling to Mexico for my son's long-deferred wedding on May 19th. I'll be out of school for approximately 12 days. While I will be teaching from Mexico, some days will contain asynchronous lessons due to travel and limited family activities. Thursday, May 20th will be a completely off day. It's our return date, yet to be established due to my mother's health. All supplies and materials will be provided ahead of time for any class activities that take place while I'm outside the country. Please contact me ahead of time. Can you imagine? Now, nothing has happened to her yet, as far as we know, but you got to hope. This one, national, it's all over the place. I hope there are not that many teachers like this, but there are some. And then there are others who see this as a power move, I guess, to continue to teach from home and are following what the school board tells them to do. So what has been the reaction of parents? Well, about 6% or more public schools think they're going to drop. They're losing parents that might not come back. Due to the pandemic, they found other safe harbors. One of them is homeschooling or hybrid homeschooling. So this week, the Harvard professor named Dr. Elizabeth Bartlett, she made national news last April when she wrote a law school article calling for a presumptive ban on homeschooling, saying, if you're homeschooling, we believe you're a menace, essentially. You shouldn't be able to do it. That got shot down. Did it stop her in the wake of the pandemic? No. What she did is she wrote another big article this week that says, all right, we won't presumptively shut you down, but we're going to regulate homeschooling more. And she held up Germany as the example of how we should regulate people when it comes to them homeschooling their kids. In Germany, it's almost impossible to homeschool. The regulations are that tough. So yes, you can do it. It's one of those things. But really, in reality, you're unable to do it. Watch for more of this. And the big news here this week that was late breaking in the week when it comes to reading, writing, and reason, and it comes to your kids in school, is a number of schools even prior. I'm looking at this from May 12th, right? So that was earlier in the week. Schools ditch student mask requirements in growing numbers. But we're getting some conflict here because you're hearing some people say that kids under 12, since they can't be vaccinated, still have to wear masks, and that could continue into the next school year. Now, I don't see the science behind that. You have some in the Biden administration talking about vaccinating kids as young as 2. I don't support that either. So be watching for this. It's up to you to voice what you want to be done in your local school district. That's where your kid is. And it will be very interesting to see if kids are wearing masks in school districts around here by edict of the school when we get back in September. If I had to bet, Philadelphia will, and probably Montgomery County because of Valerie Arcouch. But that's an open question. It's not settled yet. The dilemma is, so far, kids under 12 can't be vaccinated. They may be at some point over the summer. Who knows? Who knows what that dynamic will look like? But I get it why parents are reluctant to vaccinate young children. By young, I mean under 12, certainly. There's going to be a big issue that you'll have as a parent coming up. It's time that you let the school board, the administrator, let them know what you're thinking. I mean, this could be an issue even coming up in this cycle, this election cycle, come November, when we get to the school board elections. Who knows? It's out there right now. I'll have a whole lot more next week. And again, I hope you enjoyed Donna Sharon. Really, like Braveheart, as I said, keeping those schools open. Don't forget your school district. They could have done it too. They had to be creative. They had to be urgent. They had to be dogged. They had to move heaven and earth, but they did it. without any cases related to this, it was doable, is the bottom line. Each and every Friday, don't forget, check out Talk Radio 1210, WPHT, and right there, .com, you'll be able to get your podcast of the Dom and Dan production here of Reading, Writing, and Reason. Have a great week, and please share this.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.